Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Now, a couple of years ago, playwright and actor Joanne Ryan, she heard this fascinating story of a forgotten Limerick native, Constance Smith. She ended up a massive star in Hollywood in the late 40s into the 50s, but it didn't go well for the poor woman. Joanne became very interested. The result is a play to honour her. It's called Connie. And Joanne Ryan is live from our studio in Limerick. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Not so bad at all. I'm kind of now into Constance Smith as well. It's going to spread this disease of yours. How did you hear about her, by the way? Where did it come from?
Yeah, so I wrote the play with a good friend of mine, a co-creator and theatre maker, Anne Blake.
Yeah.
And Sharon Slater is a Limerick historian who's been doing a lot of amazing work to unearth forgotten women of Limerick. And she gave a talk where she spoke about Constance Smith that Anne went to, actually. And then Anne came to me and told me about this amazing woman. And we were so confused and amazed because we're both women, we're in Limerick's artistic community, and yet we'd somehow never heard of this Hollywood star who was born right in the city centre on Wolfetone Street. So we became really fascinated by her and the reasons why, you know, people are forgotten, women are forgotten. Mm-hmm. And Connie emerged from that.
Particularly when you see her in quite big movies and also presenting an Oscar, at the ceremony, you're going, how do we not know this woman? She was born nearly 100 years ago, 1929,
yes,
in Limerick. What happened in her family after that?
Well, she was born in Limerick because her mum was from Limerick and her dad, Sylvester Smith, was working on the Shannon scheme. So they were building the hydroelectric power station out in Ardnacrusha.
Yeah.
And he was in the army. He was an explosives expert.
Yeah.
And then shortly after her birth, the Shannon scheme was completed. And so all of that work dried up and there was very little work for those men in Limerick. So they were forced to leave and they moved to a tenement in Ranelagh called Mount Pleasant Place.
Yes.
And lived in really appalling conditions. Like myself and Anne found footage of that exact tenement from the 60s.
Really?
And I was crying watching it, like really, really horrendous conditions, kind of unimaginable in living memory in Ireland. She was very beautiful. She looked very like the actress Hedy Lamarr.
Yes.
And Rank Studio at the time were trying to find new stars for this exploding kind of film business industry. And so they did a call out for lookalikes.
That's how they recruited movie stars.
Yeah, one of the ways. And the whole tenement clubbed together to find, you know, the money and the dress and the photograph and the means to kind of allow her to enter the competition. Off the back of that, she got a screen test in Ranks, and then
was in London. Can
yes,
you imagine
in Islington. Yeah,
her trip to London.
I know, and against her will, it was her mother, by all accounts, who was forcing her into this. She was a reluctant star at the start, at least. And then she got a place in Ranks Charm School. So Ranks were running a school called the Company of Youth, informally known as the Charm School, where they were training up new actors and training them in deportment and elocution and dance and fencing and acting, of course. So she got a place in that school and trained up.
And when The Mudlark comes along, which was her kind of breakthrough film, what age is she?
Oh, at that stage, so she was 17 going, so very young still in her late teens, early 20s. At that point, and she played an Irish maid very brilliantly. She's excellent in the role, and was spotted by Daryl Zanuck, who was the executive producer of Fox Studios at the time.
I love the Irish kind of theatrical Irishness of this. But let's have a listen to Constance Smith. She's playing the Irish maid here, but you can't mistake her.
Flaming Patrick, what is it? Oh, no, you don't, me bucko.
Oh, don't hurt him, Slattery, please.
I ain't got nothing, Governor, honest, I.
Ah, and so it's nothing, is it, to be hiding under Her Majesty's own table?
Leave him alone, he's only a baby.
What do you mean? A sneak under her own dining table and you taking his part? Is it your own brat, then?
Miss Noonan, if you please.
That did it, me girl, that did it completely. Now we'll see what Mr. Naseby has to say about the matter.
Well, if I were you, Mr. Burmydown Castles, I'd think twice before carrying tales to Mr. Naseby about this lad. And him after taking in every hang of word that came out of your mouth not a moment since.
I think Flamin' Patrick is going to be my new exclamation. And she has to put on that silly accent, doesn't she? Because that's what's expected in the film.
Yes, yeah. There was a lot of controversy about her accent because they were always trying to get her to lose her Irish accent and she resisted.
Really?
Yeah, and to change her name. They wanted her to change her name to Tamara Hickey, of all things. And she resisted.
The Paddy Wackery are up.
Yeah, well. Exactly. It wasn't Irish enough. Constance Smith, they thought.
The guy who co-founded 20th Century Fox Studios, Daryl Zanuck. So he saw this film and he said, she's a star.
Yeah, so he gave her a 7-year contract at Fox and she married an English actor, theatre actor called Brian Forbes. And then very shortly after the wedding, she was flown over to Hollywood to begin her Hollywood career.
She becomes pregnant, doesn't she? Because she's a married woman now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This exposes the horrors, which we know now of our early Hollywood, but it's just incredible.
Yes. So she was forced by the studio to have an abortion. And I couldn't believe, I'm very naive maybe, but I was so shocked by that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when we looked into it, it was, you know, par for the course at the time. And studios had their own abortionists. And they were completely owned, these actors, these contract actors, lock, stock and barrel by the studios.
Incredible.
And they controlled every aspect of their lives. You know, it was really horrendous. Like,
especially for her, because she's coming out of the tenements almost to freedom, and yet she's really in this terrible prison.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, you know, because she's often compared to Maureen O'Hara. Maureen O'Hara was 10 years ahead of her, so she was sort of the next, billed as the next Maureen O'Hara. And Maureen O'Hara was able to resist a lot of things in the studio, a lot more successfully than Connie was. But she was also coming from a place of privilege. She was middle class. She had a great support network, whereas Connie was coming from poverty and didn't have any of those things, you know. So she was very, very alone and vulnerable in Hollywood.
With all that control over her, herself, her entire person, she somehow still managed to continue making films and doing a really, really good job.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, so we've watched so many of her films now. We've been working on this for over 5 years, myself and Anne, a long time. And we've had the chance to watch a lot of her work. And she's really excellent. Like, she a very talented, very intelligent actor. Definitely had the chops to be a huge star, you know.
She played the lead in Man in the Attic. Tell us about this film, by the way. Jack Palance was the co-star.
Yes, so Man in the Attic is about, set in the 1800s, about the Jack the Ripper sort of character. And she plays an actress in it, which has been very useful for us because she says things that actors would say, which we've been able to incorporate into the show. And she's brilliant in it, yeah.
I need you, Lily. Only you can save me.
Save you?
Come away with me right now. Come away with me anywhere in the world you say. I want to live close to you without sharing you. Close. Close.
I think there's something you should understand. I'm fond of you, but I'm not ready to be taken over. I like a man with passion, but I don't want a slave and I don't want to be one.
What a great voice she had. Oh,
yes, an incredible voice.
What happens to her? She was the rising star. She's in that film. She got to present an Oscar. It doesn't work out. Why?
Well, by all accounts, because she resisted the casting couch. So Daryl Zanuck was one of the inventors of the horrendous casting couch in Hollywood.
He's the original Harvey Weinstein,
yeah,
isn't he?
He literally had a couch for that purpose in his office, and with a sign over it that said, "Don't forget, darling, tomorrow you're going to be a star." And we read in one book that we read about Hollywood history that there were subterranean tunnels in this built into the studio to ferry the actresses to his office, and the whole studio shut down between 4 and 4:30 every day, so that actresses wouldn't, you know, actors had no excuse. The whole studio was shut down for that purpose. Like, it was completely systemic part of how the studio operated. You know,
Constance Smith didn't go in for this.
Well, she resisted. They're the accounts that we have. And as a result, was blacklisted and ostracised and kicked out of Hollywood, basically. And her career was ended.
So on one hand, you go, fair play to her. She resisted. She didn't conform. But she paid a horrific price.
A huge price. On top of also having had, you know, the forced abortion, as I said. So she'd lost so much.
Yes.
And so she left, she went to London, she was in some films there, and then moved to Italy for a number of years. So at the time, film business was exploding in Italy. All the spaghetti westerns were being shot there. So she was in some films there, and married the son of an Italian fascist. She's such an incredible life, Oliver.
And this is post-war, isn't it? We're into the 50s.
And that marriage was annulled by his father, who called her a barefoot Irish peasant, and wouldn't have it. And then she met Paul Rotha. So Paul Rotha was very serious, celebrated, you know, Oscar-nominated documentarian, and they had a very passionate, volatile relationship that lasted for much of the rest of his life. Until the late 70s, he died mid 80s.
Does she have a nice time in this Italy period of her life? Does she?
Yeah, I mean, Sharon has told us our brilliant endless source of knowledge and information. Sharon Slater, our consulting historian, has told us that she did have some nice times in Italy, you know, and she had a lovely summer house on an island that she went to at times.
Yeah.
But she was kind of swept away by Paul Rotha, and they went off together and worked. At the time, he was researching a documentary of his called The Life of Adolf Hitler, which is about the life of Adolf Hitler.
Yeah. And 10 years after the war.
Yeah, so very recent, and recently afterwards. And they went to Germany, they went to the camps, they interviewed Holocaust survivors. It was very, very traumatic experience, yes. You know, for both of them. So she accompanied him on his projects after that.
It would seem the trauma that she endured in Hollywood follows her, doesn't it? And she slips into addiction.
Yes, very much so. Both of them, actually. So he was also an alcoholic, and they fell into alcoholism, and she also had addiction to barbiturates as well.
Wow.
It was very, very sad, volatile life after that, for the most part.
When he dies, she leaves Italy, comes to London, and the later part of her life is quite sad.
Yeah, so she ended up dying in 2003 in Islington, living in a council flat, completely estranged from everybody in her life, to the point where when her body was found, the council didn't know what to do with it, you know. So what they do in those situations, we discovered, is they cremate the body, and the ashes are scattered on a communal scatter ground. So her ashes were scattered on
That's what happened to her?
Yeah, in Islington Cemetery. So myself and Anne, we went on a recce a few years ago to London to kind of revisit moments of her life there. And we were lucky enough on the day that we went to just see the outside of the flat that she lived in, we actually got to go in, because it was the exact moment that the tenancy was changing hands. So the Virgin
That's
Media
so
guy
strange,
came to install
isn't
it? The internet, and we kind of slipped in behind him. And then the new tenant arrived, and we got to walk around the flat that she had lived and died in.
What was it like?
It was amazing, and like it really interesting, because we were looking at the scenes out the window, and those would have been completely unchanged. All those buildings were the same buildings that would have been on either side when she lived there. So we were seeing what she would have looked at every day. It was really incredible.
How long would she have been living there on her own, estranged from everybody?
Oh, a number of years, because we were in touch with her surviving sibling, who sadly passed away since, Nolene, and we were lucky enough to speak to her. And she had tried to visit her a number of times there over the years, you know, and tried to rekindle a relationship
with
her.
Because there were 10 siblings, so there would have been a huge, wide family.
But yeah.
They never got their connection back.
No, well, she was the eldest, and so she had left before Nolene, for example, was even born. And then also there was so much shame around, because she became like, there was one weekend that we were or week that we were working on this together, and it was the weekend that Sinead O'Connor died, myself and Anne, and we were really struck by the similarities and resonances between their experience, because Connie was tabloid fodder, you know. Her most, her lowest, most difficult moments were kind of splattered all over tabloids all over the world, you know. And so
used
that was
up, exploited by an industry.
Yeah, totally exploited. Yeah. Yeah, even long after she had stopped working in that industry, and so there was a lot. There was a lot of shame for her mother in particular, who sort of cut her off, really, you know.
Oh, wow.
Very, very tough. So, and that time we were in London, we went to the cemetery where her ashes were scattered, and we were given permission to take some of that soil away from the cemetery and bring it back to Limerick. And actually today, this afternoon, some of that soil is going to be put into a bronze bowl that is going to be put into a limestone piece of work that is going to hold a Hollywood star for Connie, that a Limerick artist, Mary Conroy, who's been working with us since very early in the development of Connie, has designed and has been, it's been cast in bronze in a foundry in Cork, and it's being installed today. Yeah.
So the Hollywood star at last.
So she will finally get her Hollywood star. Thanks to Ormiston House, who are also our commissioning partner. They also commissioned this piece from Mary.
In the People's Park.
Yeah, right in the People's Park in the centre of Limerick. So we're so we're so thrilled.
And you have
about
this play as well. And this will be about her life, I presume, will it?
Yeah, so it'll tell the incredible story of her life, you know, and we're working with an amazing, oh my God, amazing team of creatives to bring it to life. And it's going to happen in the Theatre Royal.
The Theatre Royal?
Even more amazing.
Yeah, that's closed, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been closed for nearly 30 years. This is the first public performance.
Wow.
Yeah, in Limerick's Theatre Royal. So the Theatre Royal was founded in the 1800s. It was part of the International Athenaeum movement, which was very progressive at the time, a kind of way of bringing education and knowledge to people, regardless of social class and income.
That's lovely. And the life of Constant.
Yeah,
and
was a cinema, I suppose, most importantly in the 40s and 50s, and screened some of her
Connie,
films.
So Connie is coming to Limerick's Theatre Royal the 18th of October to the 2nd of November. So you've a good long run there.
Yes.
And there's also an Irish Sign Language interpreted show.
There
and
is.
An audio described one.
There
it's
is,
very nice,
yeah, which we're delighted about as well. So, can't wait.
Good luck with it.
Thanks so much, Oliver.
And thanks a million for bringing this story to us. It is absolutely, it's amazing. Joanne Ryan, thank you very much.
Thank you.